Do you want to start or scale your food business in Canada? My guest for today's podcast is the founder of Foodpreneur Lab, a nonprofit organization that empowers Black Canadian foodpreneurs by providing them with mentorship and resources to gain success in the food sector. Here is episode 8 of Business and Culture Podcast. What up, everyone? Kariz Maggie here, and welcome back to another episode of the Business and Culture Podcast. This is where business meets culture, and I have a great guest with me today. As many of you know, this podcast is all about focusing on entrepreneurship in Canada. And when it comes on to the food scene, we have so much diversity here in Canada, especially Toronto, and many persons are trying to, you know exactly how they can start. And so my guest for today's podcast, she is, as I would say, she's the expert in this area. She knows how to get you ready to launch and to scale your food business. So thank you for being here with me, Janice.
Thank you for having me, Maggie. It's a pleasure.
We're just going to dive right in, and I want to really talk about your journey. So I really want to get to know a bit more about your story, even before we talk about Foodpreneur Lab, which is your nonprofit initiative.
Sure.
Who is Janice?
Janice has been a, what do we call, jack of all trades or Jill of all trades, master of none. I put that out there, and I own it because not everybody fits into the norm. And what do I mean by the norm? You know, as black people, we have parents that, you know, education, you must do this. And without giving away my age, I come from old school. So for me, it was a little bit of a struggle. I was more of an athlete than I was an academic. And that created some problems with my parents because, you know, that was an expectation. But the reason why I bring this up, though, is because you may not fit into that stream, but that doesn't mean you don't have something to contribute. You don't have value. Mm. And so I think it's very important, especially for anyone, and especially for anyone that's currently in school that's kind of struggling, my message to them is, hey, all is not lost, because, you know, life is not a straight road. Let me tell you, it is crooked. It is so crooked. It is unbelievable. But yet somehow, and I truly believe in this phrase, you wind up where you're supposed to be. Mm-hmm. With the caveat, as long as you make good choices, in brackets. But yeah, and so for me, you know, I worked in a dentist's office. I worked at a bank. I worked at a optician's office. I mean, I did all those admin skills. And what was interesting for me was, while I enjoyed them, I never felt satisfied. And I couldn't put my finger on it. And for a number of things, I didn't exactly have immediate role models around me, women my age that I could have these conversations with. Mm-hmm. And because I had already moved back to Canada, I didn't have the sage advice of the aunties and those women that support us, who are so important in our lives and in our growth. What I had some phenomenal women when I lived back home that kind of helped place the roadmaps, the signposts. So mm-hmm. I kind of knew, but deep down inside, I felt very unfulfilled when it came to certain jobs. So I knew I wanted to be either in management or in some leadership, but I couldn't put my finger on it. So for me, it was, I tried a lot of things that didn't work, but it never stopped me from trying. And then eventually I started my own business, and ironically, I registered the business. I knew I was going to do something admin, but don't ask me anything else about what was going to, you know, I was like, you know what, let's just try this. Mm-hmm. And it so happened that I met someone that I partnered with them, and they had work, and I was doing admin, and that grew from that. Mm-hmm. And then that grew into me writing proposals, and kind of venturing into areas I never thought possible, only because I didn't know they existed. And there lies the difference. You see, because, and I've always said, you know, Canada is a phenomenal country, but if you don't know the opportunities that are going on, you miss out on so much. And so one of the things that we try and help is, you know, helping disseminate information, trying to get it to trickle down to as many people as possible, because that's the gap between us being able to participate and us being absent.
True. Wow, that's a great point. I'm actually glad that you brought that up, because in episode 7, where I talked to the founder of an organization that they deal with like grants, helping businesses access grant, I mean, he was talking about so many opportunities even when you're starting out, and I'm just here like, okay, yes. So yes. I really don't know what I'm doing, which I've always known, like, I don't know what I'm doing. This is also part of my journey, really learning about, you know, the resources that are out there, and in that sharing that information for people who need it. But it is true that you say, you know, Canada has a lot of resources, but sometimes it's all about being around the right people, being at the right place in order for you to access it and really tap into these resources that are available. So thank you for bringing up the point.
Oh, for sure. And you say being around the right people, that's about you building a network. And one of the things that I know personally years ago, I hated the phrase networking, and I hated networking. It felt so usurious. You go into a room, you laser eye whoever you want to meet, and you go on, you kind of pump them for information, and then you leave. And so I was like, okay, you know what? I have to change this approach. So rather than use the term networking, I would use the term building community or connect. Actually, it was connecting. Rather than networking, I chose the phrase connecting. When I changed that phrase, just like how we're having that conversation, this conversation, that was my approach now. So when I went into a room, it was two things: to meet people and to tell them what I did with no agenda.
Yes.
With no agenda. And then, so what started to happen was I would start talking to people. And as I learned more about what they did, I would bank that information. So if I ever crossed paths with someone in that particular sector, I could say, hey, actually, I know somebody that might be able to help you. And so that is how that connecting, you know, evolved. And that has proven quite successful for me. I share that with other mentees that I work with. I say, you know, don't look at it as networking. Look at it as connecting with people, even if their service has nothing to do with your sector. Mm-hmm. Because what we like to do is two things. We want to be able to inform others, and we want to be able to help them, connect them to the right people. And I think if you keep those two in mind, then, hey, you're an asset.
Awesome. And that is great that you brought that up, because in what you shared about your journey, I mean, it took you a lot of paths to even find out what you were interested in. I think the biggest mistake a lot of people make is they only focus on getting to know people in their network. And then when they do need to shift from that, it's like now they have nobody, you know, that is in that field, whether it's you're trying to shift to the industry or you're trying to get information. I mean, I've always been a YouTuber. I never really saw myself as anything like that. It was possible to be anything bigger until last year. And now I find myself connecting with people who are directors and script writers. And it's like, you never know when you might need them. I had a grant I had to do the other day, and I needed portfolio for those same people.
So there you go.
All of this, it was because of, you know, connecting, as you mentioned, building relationships with people beforehand without any agenda. I'm just genuinely curious to know what you do. And then
absolutely,
when the time comes, it's like you're ready. You're always ready. So you know how to get ready. So you stay ready. So you know how to get ready.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's funny too, because in the conversation, I always say to people before I leave, hey, listen, if I ever come across anybody, I'll let you know and I'll connect you. And that way, that becomes a memorable experience, because, you know, when you talk to people, you're actually building an experience. You can either build a positive one or you can build a negative one. I prefer the positive, because, you know, I always naturally have a sense of humor, so I'm pretty laid back, you know, and you know, if I, unless I have to be a certain way, then I will be. But I generally try to be in the mindset of approachability, because nobody wants to come to you and eager and excited to meet you, and you're so standoffish.
Yeah.
That it sends the message, oh, okay, well, you know, clearly I can't come to her and talk to her. I don't want that. That's not the message. That's not who I am. So I've always had an open door policy. My children will tell you that. my team will tell you that. I just believe, you know, no, there are no stupid questions. My father always taught me that. There are no stupid questions. And when people genuinely want to learn, embrace that. Don't extinguish that flame ever.
Wow, beautifully said. And I know that you became an entrepreneur. You know, it started in admin. You are using your talents. So to kind of segue now, how did that turn into you getting involved in the food industry to then, you know, have this nonprofit organization now helping to amplify the vision of food entrepreneurs?
Well, so that gig that started with admin, one of my first jobs was doing a survey for a well-renowned private golf club.
Ooh.
And so it led to that. They wanted customer service feedback, and I worked on that project. And then an opportunity came up to look at training within a food setting environment for people that were interested in getting into the food business from a food service standpoint. And so once that started, I started applying to, they were called youth at risk RFPs. And or I should say for those RFQs, request for funding. And so I started applying to those, and you know, a couple of times it was a miss, and then one day I got a hit. I got a double whammy. I got funding for two programs, and that was very instrumental for me, because that was validity in more ways than one. It validated I knew what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
It validated the program that I designed, and it validated that I had something to contribute. So, and that's important as an entrepreneur, because the problem with entrepreneurship, you don't get immediate results.
No. It's a marathon.
It's long suffering, and it's not, I always say, it's not for the faint of heart. You have to be cut from a different fabric altogether. You know, it's like bounce back Teflon, Kevlar.
Honestly.
You know, so yeah, it's not for the faint of heart. So when that happened, I used to run a hospitality and culinary program. And then I got into the culinary side, we ran a program for pre-apprenticeship cooks. And that was my foray into the culinary side. And I did that for 15 years. So I was very fortunate to work with some amazing chefs, you know, three and a half, four star restaurants at the time back in early 2000, you know, and worked with some wineries and did some training. So I was in a very unique position to have those experiences. However, on the flip side of that, I never saw people who looked like me. So it was very interesting. And I think I know that's where I learned to navigate, because it's a different form altogether. I always say, when you're the only person of color in the room, it says a couple things, which is, okay, well, one, why are you here? Well, you must have something to offer. You have value, which is great. But then as a person of color in the room, you look around and you go, okay, well, why aren't others here with me?
Mm-hmm.
Because I know I'm not the smartest person in the room, you know, whether or not they're of color or not, but I know some amazing, educated people of color that are not in those rooms either. And so, again, I was always paying attention to that. And that happened for, God, 2 decades. a decade and a half at least, and that was the environment I was in. So I've always been conscious of that, or I shouldn't say conscious more so, but aware, very aware of how many of us are in the room. And I was like, oh, okay, all right. And then, you know, it's a bit of an epiphany. Mm-hmm. Once you start asking questions and either you can't get the answers or you get the answers, you can't go back to ignorance of not noticing.
Yes, that's true.
Right? So then what happens after that is you're compelled to do something.
Yes. Yes. Right? The pressure is on now.
Yeah. And so basically what happened, I wound up being in a space where, again, in food, very little visibility for Black food entrepreneurs. I would say 1 to 2%. Mm-hmm. And I distinctively remember asking myself, what is wrong with this picture?
Yeah.
And if it's food, we are the motherland of food. I mean, we have recipes that, you know, we don't even write down because it's just part of who we are. It's ingrained in our DNA.
Yeah.
You know, we don't use measuring cups or whatever. You know, yeah. A inch and a dab and
right?
So on. Exactly. And so when I saw that, I was like, okay, you have two choices. You can ignore it or you can try and fix it. And I was trying to fix it because I couldn't ignore it.
Yeah.
And even though I brought it to the attention of others, they chose to ignore it. And so that really drove home that, okay, you know what, it's for you and your community to fix. It's not on anyone else. We now have to take ownership of our space.
Yeah.
And if we don't have a space, we now have to create a space so we can take ownership of a space. And so for me, that was the driving force. And that led to the creation of Foodpreneur Lab.
Wow, amazing. And so I'm curious to know, what are some of the resources that Foodpreneur Lab offers to, you know, this underrepresented group in the food industry?
So what I've always done from in the beginning is, if someone had a question about, you know, how do I start a product, I've always made myself accessible to try and help them. And that was kind of the frustrating part, because one, it's a business like everybody else. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh yeah, we weren't looking for money. No, you know, there's overhead to cover and everything else. But what really broke my heart was there were so many people coming to me and asking me these questions and seeking help that had viable ideas, but had no money whatsoever to support mm-hmm. them on this. So that in itself was quite frustrating, being a part of that. So one of the things that our mandate that we tried to make sure was that when we designed our pathways, we would keep in mind what were the supports that a food entrepreneur needs. It's knowledge, access, and information. That's the education component of it. So we wanted to minimize the errors, which is, hey, I have a great logo, so I'm going to slap on, that's going to be my label, only to find out it didn't meet the regulatory requirements. So you have to double back after you spent $3,000.
Yeah.
So we wanted to minimize those costs. We wanted to make sure that we had industry advisors that knew what they were talking about because they've done it, not from a teaching standpoint, but from an actionable standpoint. Yeah. And so for me, that was very important. So when we designed it, we looked at, okay, we wanted to honor and recognize the Black experience, the lived experience. We wanted to ensure that when participants were with us, they felt a sense of community, mm-hmm. because these were individuals that had possibly had other negative experiences going into other accelerator units and being withdrawn because somebody didn't understand the food product, that because it was cultural. So they didn't understand the food product. And so when that happens, and it doesn't even matter, just as a community, when we go into spaces where we don't have peer recognition or identity, we withdraw. That's natural. We don't participate because we're too afraid to put up our hand or, you know, be seen, or we don't want to make a mistake. And so having that opportunity was extremely important. And we wanted to make sure that we created that environment.
Oh, wow, I love that. And I think what I read on your website is that to date you have helped like hundreds of food entrepreneurs out there who have, you know, their products. And what is it that you would say is the number one key difference with, you know, the food industry here in Canada? Because I think sometimes one of the main reasons I wanted to do this podcast is to share the Canadian experience. A lot of resources that is out there is from the American, you know, perspective. So right. we know that it's very different for both industries. What would you say is a key thing that is a difference between American food regulation and like Canadian if someone wants to get into food business?
So our food regulations are a lot stricter.
Oh.
We require more information on our labeling. We've just updated our Food Safety Act under the, I think it's called SPRC, I can't remember, in 2019. And so we've raised the bar now. So we want our ingredients listed, you know, and there's a format for labeling. So you can't just slap any old thing on a bottle and then put it on the shelf. There are guidelines that we have to meet. The other thing that makes us different is the U.S. has a higher population base.
Yes.
And in having that, they have the luxury of having more access to money and corporate support. And I think that's huge. In Canada, we see more corporate support now, but we don't have the population base to support those numbers like the U.S. But what I'd like to see is, and we are now seeing, is more corporate involvement in the food space. You know, you see TELUS talking about food security. You see other organizations starting to participate. And that's very important because it can't be done on its own. It has to be community, whether it's public-private partnerships. And I'm a huge advocate for that. The same as I believe that, you know, addressing food insecurity and food sovereignty has to be a public-private partnership as well, because you don't want to isolate yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make sure it's community-based and it's inclusive as well.
Yes. Wow. Wow. I love it. Like your answer is that's like the simplest way you could have explained it. And I think everyone has gotten it. And the last thing I would probably ask you is for your programs that you offer, I know you have one that is coming up. Anyone who's listening to this, who's probably interested in, you know, starting in food business, what is something you would advise them for getting themselves ready to be a part of that program?
Sure. So we opened up applications yesterday for our start and scale pathways. Mm-hmm. We will be accepting 50 participants in total, 35, which are launch, and 15 scale. One of the things that we talk about for those that have a food idea, you don't have to have it completely mapped out.
Okay.
In the start pathway, we look at the idea and how to get it to a prototype. Now, fairly, it has to have some legs to it because you can't just throw anything out there and expect success. Mm-hmm. So there has to be some form of viability to it. I highly recommend that if you have an idea that's a food product, do some market research prior to. And if you've done it, then try and articulate what you've done in the application, because we've had participants that they had an idea coming in. We helped them pivot on the idea and they have a prototype.
Okay.
So it's not that it can't be done. With regard to scale participants, that's geared to those that are currently in the market and are looking to get to the next level. We as Foodpreneur Lab, we don't decide what that next level is. We listen to you and let you tell us what next level is for you. And so that can vary. It could be scalability, which is in your recipes. It could be packaging. Whatever you want that to be, that is where we will meet you and put the focus on. And one of the things that we talk about through the pathways is that we pride ourselves on meeting the participants where they are at, versus traditionally you have to meet the program where it's trying to take you. So rather than push, you know, ours is a gentle pull, like come with us and we will help you get to wherever you need to go. The other thing is our advisory paths are unique to the experience, which is while you're building the business, you have access to experts that can help you deal with the pain points that you are experiencing.
Lovely. Okay.
Which rarely ever happens.
Yeah.
You know, you'd have to pay somebody to get the advice to execute on, you know, troubleshooting, for lack of a better word. So it creates that very unique opportunity. And as I say to the participants, you know, make the best of that one-on-one time, because that's what you actually get, one-on-one time with the advisors. You Wow. start off in a group setting, but then you get to pick their brain and work with them and think of ideas that's unique to your food business. So we're quite proud of what we've been able to design, and equally as proud to see the innovative foods that have come through the pathway. It's just been a phenomenal experience.
Wow. And you definitely should be proud, and your team should definitely be proud of what you have accomplished. I have seen some of the products that have been able to come out of this program. So it is definitely a very useful one. I've heard great things from participants themselves.
Thank you.
So, and it is a free program. Okay. So if you're listening to
it, this is fully funded. You couldn't get a better wish than this.
Right. This is a deal. You
know, it is a deal. The funding ends December 2024. Our first cohort is going to start April the 3rd. We're currently accepting applications. So for those of you who are interested, please apply. This is a great opportunity of a lifetime. Can't guarantee what's going to happen after 2024, but we are going to do our best to help build and sustain an environment for BIPOC food entrepreneurs. And that's part of our mandate that I'm very committed to.
Perfect. And I will definitely put all the links in the show notes if you're listening to this on a podcast platform. If you're watching on YouTube, check out the description box. Also, the website for Foodpreneur Lab is going to be available. And so you're able to go ahead on the website, check out all the resources available, all that good stuff. So, man, this was a lovely conversation. I learned a lot.
Thank you.
And I am just grateful for individuals like you who are, you know, you see a problem, instead of complaining about it, you're actually doing the work to get it started. I know that it couldn't have been easy. That is something that I know for sure. But you stood the test of time and you're helping people. And I know that they will be eternally grateful for what you and your team has been able to accomplish. So thank you on behalf of everyone. Janice, thank you from the bottom.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I always say to people, hey, listen, I was provoked into purpose sometimes.
I love that.
No word of a lie. I was provoked into purpose and here I am. So you know what? Getting ticked off by people sometimes can have a great end result.
It really can. Well, before I let you go, I'm having a new segment called Business Nuggets. So my guest can give some nuggets for anyone who's listening. What is your business nugget for the day?
My business nugget is, you know, that money that you think you should be investing in your business and you don't? It's not your business you're investing in. It's you you're investing in. So Ooh. It's worth it.
A word. A word.
It's true. It's true.
Thank you so much again.
You're very welcome.
To my listeners, to my viewers, thank you for tuning in. And I will see you all in another episode of Business and Culture Podcast. Bye.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. If you're listening to the Business and Culture Podcast on Spotify, you can participate in our poll and questions for every single episode. We would love to hear from you and get your feedback. Don't forget to subscribe or follow and leave us a review so we know how you're finding this podcast. Looking forward to you listening to more episodes with more inspiration, more insights, and more business and culture. Catch you in the next episode.